Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here today. On my behalf, first, I would like to thank the Vanderbilt Group, which they accepted to share this wonderful experience of running the workshop in Toronto. I think so far has been really great, and I wish you enjoyed it as much as I did. So I think being the last speaker has some advantage and disadvantage. So the advantage, obviously, is that I don't have to go through the too many biological discussions. I can write already, start writing the equation on the blackboard for you if you want. But so let me go very quickly here. This is the collaborators, Steve and Mike. You just heard Mike talk about Meron Carter is a physics professor at MIT. Sen Gupta is at Harvard MIT Health Division. He has been in collaboration with us on the nano delivery stuff, which I've been talking about. And Christopher, the postdoc at MIT, Jibin and Colin are graduate students who are helping us with some improvements in the model. Well, as I mentioned, I don't need too much background. It's obviously that apparently it seems that currently available anti-angiogenic agents are likely to yield significant therapeutic gains on their own. But they will need to be in combination with conventional treatments such as chemo or radiation therapy to achieve the maximal benefit. And also it's kind of obvious that there are kind of, you know, quite mixed results in terms of experimental studies, which could be at least partially due to the differences in sequencing and scheduling of these modalities. So there are mainly two challenges when you want to combine these type of agents. One is that the successful combination is the reason is that the anti-angiogenic therapy impedes blood flow, preventing efficient delivery of the chemotherapy as well as, for example, with oxygen, which can, as Mike mentioned, can affect the radiation therapy outcome. And the second challenge is that, again, it was discussed in the previous talk, that the vasculature arise from angiogenesis and or vasculogenesis, especially and temporally heterogeneous and very inefficient at delivering nutrients and drugs. And two suggested approach was normalization. We heard about normalization many times in this workshop, and I'm going to also talk about the nano delivery system in order to combine these type of treatments. Of course, I would look over it as a mathematical model. Well, just very briefly mentioned, so Mike mentioned about this type of, you know, the hypothesis by Rakesh Jain. I would like to just add to that, you know, when after, first of all, the normalization process is not kind of, you know, obvious that as soon as you do the combination, you're going to see that process, as Mike mentioned. And on the other hand, there could be two scenarios that happen after that. First of all, could be, for example, over inhibition of VEGF, if you apply BC101, for example, which, again, you have the now too many angiogenesis factors, and therefore we're going to remove most of the vasculature, and we end up with having a huge hypoxia regime. And on the other hand, there could be, for example, the resistance to VEGF-based therapies, or the other, for example, angiogenesis factor could be increasing the system, and we end up having the second wave of the angiogenesis formation. And he also mentioned about this experiment by Wendler Group, and which they showed that the reason that I want to emphasize about this one again is that this is the paper we extracted most of the parameters in the first model that I will be talking about. So they show that the effect of radiation was more effective after, you know, application of anti-angiogenic therapy. Well, the second approach was nano delivery system. So let me just briefly mention again, Eve mentioned something about this liposome stuff. So let me just briefly mention that there are quite, you know, advantage with nanoparticles over the free drugs. I want to mainly emphasize two things here. One is that we can enhance absorption of drug into a selected tissue, for example, a solid tumor, to, for example, the large pore size on the tumor vessel. And on the other hand, we have a control on the drug release profiles, as you will see in the specific experiment that I will mention. We can control somehow the way we want these drugs to be released in the environment. So again, the tumors have this leaky blood vessels and poor lymphatic drainage, and through this effect of EPR effect, we can have extravasation of this, for example, nanoparticles inside the tumor tissue. And on the other hand, when they are, because of this dysfunctional lymphatic drainage, then what happens is that we can see the accumulation of nanoparticles inside the tissue, and therefore the release of drugs in the vicinity of the tumor cells. Of course, it's not perfect yet, but the experimental result seems to be promising. And also, on the other hand, we can increase the sensitivity of nanoparticles by adding some type of, for example, ligands to them, and in order to make them to only affect some specific cells, which for our case would be the cancer cells. This is a picture from a review article by Robert Langer group at MIT. So as you can see, the nanoparticles can reach can be extravasated and reach the tumor tissue, and also it depends on the type of nanoparticles that you use. We can have the release through the tissue, or we can have binding of them to the cancer cells in order to make them more applicable for the cancer therapy. For example, we know that there are some receptor overexpressed in the cancer cells, and we can use this fact in order to make these nanoparticles binding only to the cancer tissue. There are quite different type of nanocarriers. The ones that I will be talking about would be the polymer bases and the liposomes. So now going back to the original question, there was challenges on combining these modalities. The thing that we are interested at this moment would be the combination of chemotherapy and anti-angiogenic therapy. So what can be done is that to achieve temporal release of two drugs, we can use polymers and phospholipids in order to combine them as a single delivery agent. So it could be, for example, polymer in core and lipid in the shell. And then what happens is, again, to this EPR effect, we can have the extravasation of those nanocells, let's call them. So this is the nanocells. And then we have the polymers in the core side, which include which contains the chemotropy agent, and the lipid bilayer is the lipid layer contains the anti-angiogenic agent. And when it is inside the tissue, the lipid start to impair the blood vessels, basically, and then the nanoparticles inside that can be released due to the hypoxic, for example, region affected by the anti-angiogenic agent, and start, for example, to kill the cancer cells. So with this idea, Sen Gupta from MIT and his colleagues ran this really elegant experiment. So what they did is that they used this PLGA type polymer, which was conjugated to the chemotherapy doxorubicin. And also on the lipid layer, they encapsulated cumbertastatin. And then they designed it such that the nanoparticles which are inside is about 100 nanometers, and the whole nanocell is about 200 nanometers. And what the most important factor is the release profile. So they observed that, this is in vitro, but they found a similar result for in vivo experiment as well. So the release profile of the chemotropy is about 3 to 4 days. Anti-angiogen is about 3 to 4 days, but the chemotropy has quite a slow release, and it can be released over like 15 days, the experiment. So what they did was that they compared quite different scenarios here. So they compared the liposome, which includes only the anti-angiogenic, C is for cumbersatin, and B is for doxorubicin, so C means anti-angiogenic, B is chemotherapy. And then nanocells, which only include the doxorubicin, so these are like single agents, and then the usual combination of the LCD, so you mean that I mean that for example you have a liposome which contains both drugs with the same release profile, and then we have the nanocell doxorubicin and liposome anti-angiogenesis to be added together just independently, and finally we have nanocells with this type of specific release profile. And what they observed was that when you add single agents of each of them, like doxorubicin or camrestatin, you have like a kind of significant improvement here. In this case, when you add NCD plus LC, there is no basically any significant effect. And for later, they found out the reason is that there is limitation in terms of the number of nanocells inside the tissue. So basically, you have like half of the dosage. So I'm not going to talk about this case anymore. And then these two things, comparing the liposome and the nanocell, they saw quite a big improvement for the nanocell delivery. And so I mentioned two examples here about how you can combine them. One was using the idea of normalization. The other one was about this nanocell stuff. So here is the normalization idea, so that you can normalize the vasculature in order to have a better delivery for your drug. And the question would be that can we develop a very simple model to capture that transient normalization window? And the second thing is that we have this nanocell delivery with their specific type of release profile. So the first thing would be that what is the key mechanism for this significant outcome of the nanocells? And could it be improved by adjusting interplay between the inhibition and angiogenesis and the timing and related strength of the therapy? Which means that I want to kind of combine these two ideas and have a not only a kind of normalized, you know, vasculature, but also use those nanocells to stop. So this is our mathematical hypothesis. So let's start doing the model part. As I mentioned, I want to go with a very simple model. This is for the density of the cancer cells. Again, the usual diffusion term, the growth term, and I will talk about the coupling in a second. So in order to consider the blood vasculature, that's the most challenging part when you want to do this type of modeling. But we came up with the idea to start with a very, very simple, you know, single equation for the angiogenesis. And then instead of having the exact pattern of, you know, all these capillaries, just, you know, introduced in the system type of, you know, vascular islands, islands of vascular and non-vascular, you know, patterns. So if you look over the first equation, which is a simple diffusion, the second equation, by appropriate choice of alpha, beta, and gamma, what's going to happen is that you can produce n equal to 0. The fixed point of that equation is 0 and 1, the stable fixed point. So you have vascular or non-vascular, you know, regions inside the tissue. And starting, for example, a random initial configuration. And then the coupling term, I can add them to the equation. The first one saying that, so we know that in general the details is really complicated. So what I'm assuming here is that, which is kind of, you can expect it, that the formation of vasculature and angiogenesis helps to tumor growth to grow in size. So this basically means that whenever you have angiogenesis, you have higher, you know, larger size of the tumor. And also, on the other hand, we know that I ignore the stroma cells, so I assume that the cancer cells can produce all these, you know, growth factors in a way, but the consequence would be that we're going to have the formation of angiogenesis, so it increases I can add this coupling. But for me, the most important thing would be that now I don't have the stable fixed point at 0 and 1 anymore. I have some higher values, which would be, for example, depend on the choice of parameter alpha 2. It could be larger than 1. So it means that I have distinguished between normal vasculature and tumor vasculature by, you know, that number for the M. And then this will help me out for writing the equation for the concentration of the oxygen. Again, we have the simple diffusion. So if I assume that all the tumor vasculature would, you know, act like normal case, then I could just add a term delta M here, means that wherever you have vasculature, you could have the diffusion of the oxygen through them. But this term, this exponential one, is because of the poor delivery, basically. we know that this is, I know, a very rough approximation how to include the perfusion and diffusion limited of the type of the hypoxia. So it means that whenever you have a vasculature, doesn't mean that you have a perfect delivery as was in the normal case. So you're going to see some hypoxia regime even after the formation of the vasculature. So this is kind of a coarse grain model in a phenomenologic way to have the hypoxia and the vasculature inside the tumor. And then the next step would be to include the treatment. So let me talk about the first experiments here. So I had the combination of radiation therapy and anti-angiogenic agent. So as my anti-angiogenic agent, now you can see that the normalization idea here is kind of inherent into the model, because the anti-angiogenic agent will reduce the values of M because of that term minus ATM. AT is the temporal profile of the anti-angiogenic. So what's going to happen is that instead of having a fixed point again at a larger value of 1.5, it can be reduced again to come closer and closer to 1. And if I be able mathematically to make it to be 1, means that I have a perfect vasculature, which is like the normalized case for us. Okay? And then radiation, we assume that, as Mike pointed out yesterday, is more effective when we have the is less effective in the hypoxia regime. So that's why it is kind of proportional to the oxygen profile. So then we looked over this experiment. So we apply single organ radiation therapy or single anti-angiogenic agent, and also I combine them like neoadjuvant, concurrent, and adjuvant together. See what happens. So here are some results. The administration of anti-angiogenic therapy can partially reduce and leading to a small delay in tumor growth. So, and on the other hand, although as I mentioned, I expect to see some normalization behavior because it's kind of inherent into the model, but I didn't see that by single administration of anti-angiogenic agent, and it didn't really affect the hypoxia so much. The good thing, there are really too many bad things about the mathematical model, but there is also one good thing, is that you can go back and check what was the reason of this, you know, negative result that you see. And when you look over that exponential term, n e to the power minus m, if you plot it, it's a simple, you know, Gaussian type curve. And what happens is that it says, the model says that when you apply anti-angiogenic agents, not only you decrease the values of M from 1.5 to less than values, which is close to 1, which is normal case, but also in the tumor there are some vessels which are already normal. Not all of them have this abnormal, and chaotic form which are inefficient in the delivery. So you also remove them, those ones which are already acting as normal vessels. So you are decreasing the hypoxia in some part of the tumor, but on the other hand, you're increasing on the other part which already were acting normal. And that was the reason that we couldn't see this effect. And radiation therapy, we observed that could have two effects in our model. One is that when you reduce the cell density due to the radiation, it consequently decreased the tumor size. And also what we found interesting was that it also affects the process of angiogenesis. And because we had like the frequent, you know, type of radiation therapy applied in let's say for example 3 days here, we saw that also it affects the formation of the vasculature. And it could be, for example, the reason that sometimes in the experiment or in the clinical situation we observe that, you know, radiation or, for example, metronomic type chemotherapy could also affect the angiogenesis formation. But the other thing that I wanted to mention was about the combination. First of all, we observed that there was kind of, you know, a significant, you know, delay when we applied the combination and we applied the anti-angiogenic agent in advance to the radiation therapy. I want you to recall that the single administration didn't help out to the hypoxia that much. So we wondered that why didn't we see this, you know, combination effect, as for example Mike pointed out in the previous session. You don't see that type of, you know, hypoxic improvements in the single administration, but you're going to see something when you combine them together, and that's exactly what we observe too, that the combined treatment not only contributes to improved tumor control, but also reduces the hypoxia, which to me, in terms of the mathematical model, comes from the fact that also radiation therapy affects the angiogenesis. And although the model successfully described the main feature, there were several shortcuts. I'm going to just briefly mention a couple of things here. First thing is that I started from some random initial configuration for the tumor cells and then evolved it by time in order to get those islands. Maybe a better approach that now we are working on it is that to use the real imaging for the blood vasculature from, for example, biomarkers or this is, for example, from an MRI image. That you can then, this is your tumor, you have all those vasculature, then you can run the simulation to see how would be the effect of the combination of these agents. And the other thing is that, just very briefly, I want to mention two improvements that can be easily done. One is that you saw in the previous talk how important is the interstitial fluid pressure. So you can easily, this is from a paper by, again, Dr. James' group. I forgot to add the reference is cancer research on the idea of mathematical modeling of normalization published 2007. And it's easy to show that the pressure using, for example, a prolactic, theory to write the equation for the pressure, and this parameter alpha n is related to the permeability, conductivity, and S over V is the surface area of the vessel per volume of the tumor. And since this is pretty small comparing to the cell division, for example, we can ignore it, and then we can write just a simple Laplace-type equation for the pressure. Now, if you look over Dr. James' paper and his colleagues' paper, what they mentioned, they measurements in order to get the parameter alpha n for the normal case, tumor case, and the treatment case. And if you look over the table, the only difference comes basically from the permeability coefficient. And when you plug these numbers into the equation, you're going to see different behavior for the interstitial fluid pressure. So, but since we want to combine everything together and also look over, for example, the mice data in future, is that we can simply write a phenomenological form for this, alpha n. So I have written it in this way such that, again, recall that n equals 0, 1, and greater than 1 is my normal case. Then tumor case, and then after normalization again I have some values which is close to 1. So, and I can exactly fit the parameters phi 1 and phi 2 such that alpha n stays in this region in terms of the values of 1. When n is equal to 1, alpha n is basically phi 1, so phi 1 would be, for example, this value which is for the normal case. And the question would be that, then obviously you're going to see the same pattern that they observe. But with the main difference from their work is that they assume that the vasculature is everywhere and you have a homogeneous distribution of the blood vessels inside the tumor. But here we have some at least rough estimation about those vasculature as well. But the main question, as again Mike mentioned, is that how this is going to affect the treatment. This is what we still have to think of it, how to couple this equation for the pressure to the other, for example, to the hypoxia, if there exists any relation. The other thing that also you can do is to include the angiogenesis factors. I mentioned just in a general way how to include, but if you like more equations, it's pretty easy to do that. So you can add two equations for pro and anti-angiogenesis growth factors, again with the assumption that these guys come from the tumor cells. This is basically inside the tissue everywhere with the constant rate. And then we can define this parameter alpha G. Again, this was the idea is from Rakesh Jain's group, that you can define this parameter, which is like when we have a balance between pro and anti-angiogenesis factor, this coefficient is equal to 0. So it means that when I couple this to equation, my equation for M, this is 0, and I get the vasculature, the normal vasculature with the stable 6.0 and 1 again. But if this is greater than 1, this is a positive factor, so I'm going to jump to some values larger than 1, And if it is negative, so this will be forced to go to, it means that I have too many anti-angiogenic, you know, factors into the tissue, then what happens is that this is negative term, and you can see that the only stable fixed point is zero. It means that all the vasculature will be removed from the tissue. And the good thing about this type of model is that then you can not only talk about the type of agents which directly attack the endothelial cells, you can also talk about the different formation, you can talk about the other type of agents which can block or inactivate the proangiogenesis factor like VEGF. Okay, now this was about the normalization part. I don't know how much time I do have, but because when I started, I had like minus 30 minutes. I don't know. Okay, so I'm going to be quick to go to the nanocells delivered once then. So we have this experiment. So with the nanocells, the main point is that they don't diffuse that much, as it mentioned, so you can ignore the diffusion. But what is very important in their experiment was the release profile. So you have to take care of how those release profiles should be included into the model. So you're going to see a few, you know, equations here. So this is the nanocells. Then we have the release of the anti-angiogenic agent or the chemotropic agent. These are like free agents in the environment. And then we have a different release profile for them. So let me go a little quick here. The release profile, you can fit it by using the experimental data. And since we want to have a kind of fair comparison, we assume that we have to normalize them, means that at the end of the story, the total amount of, because when you combine treatment mathematically, you have to be careful, because you combine two things, if one of them has a higher strength, then you're going to see a better result, which could be just because of the, you know, higher killing rate that you have. So in order to have a fair comparison, we normalize all the treatments to be equal to 1. And finally, again, we can include an equation for the effect of the chemotropy agent after they are released from the nanocell, and an equation for the anti-angiogenic agent again. And the J here is J equal to 1 is again for the chemotherapy in terms of the nanocell with doxorubicin. J equal to 2 is for the liposome, and then liposome encapsulation board is J equal to 3 and J equal to 4. So what we did was basically to include all these, you know, details of release profile in the general equations that I mentioned before. It's kind of straightforward. And so here is the result. The first fitting is nothing basically, it's just fitting to experimental data. We use all the parameters according to Sengil Gupta's and his colleagues' experiments and fitted the data such that we're going to get the same control group, you know, curve, and also the same anti-angiogenic agent and chemotherapy agent for the single treatment. But the interesting part comes from this one, that then you don't do any fitting. After that, that's just the model predictions. So we kind of, you know, were able to predict the main, you know, patterns of this, you know, nanocells and the liposomes. Again, we observed that the solid lines are the mathematical model. We observed that the nanocells have more significant effects, and more importantly, when we look over our simulations, we observed that the key mechanism is this one. Basically, it's because, first of all, it's because of the temporal release profile, because in, you know, that's again another good thing about the model. Experimentally, you know that there are lots of things going on inside the tissue. But in model, I know that the only difference that I have between the liposome and nanocells is their release profile. If there is anything to happen in the model, it's coming from the release profile. And we observe that what we see is a trapping of the drug within the tumor tissue. So what happens is that the anti-angiogenic agent will start to removing all the vessels, and then nanoparticles will be trapped inside the tumor tissue and start to release the profile after that, and then we're going to see this, you know, significant effect. As I mentioned at the beginning, our final aim was that how we can, you know, play with the parameters in order to see whether we can improve the results, and combining basically these two ideas of the normalization and the nanocell delivery. And we observe that at least mathematically we can do that. So we change the release profiles of them and saw that if you make them, instead of, for example, a little slower, not too much, just a little slower, you're going to have a much better, you know, result. And when it goes to zero, doesn't mean that, you know, we cured the cancer. That's just, it just means that it is now below the threshold, so you can't, we can't see that anymore. Always we do have a threshold in order to detect the tumor tissue. So the bottom line is that with adjusted, you know, release kinetics, we were able to see some better impact, and this is what now the according to their preliminary results, we are actually true. So it can be improved by some adjustments. And in conclusion, I would just mention that the basic features of some experiments on combinations can be captured by a relatively straightforward model. And the model is kind of, I like to emphasize that this is like a coarse-grained model founded based on the phenomenology of the experiment and ignored cellular and molecular details, but hopefully one can be, you know, improved later. And some models can be used with some limitation, of course, for hypothesis testing in situ. And as you saw, at least for this type of nanocells, sometimes you can do some specific suggestions which can be further, you know, validated in the experimental situation. Okay, thank you.